do section. Pompidou. And I am being recorded.
Oh, there you are. We can hear you.
Oh, twats.
Who's the twats?
Absolute. Huge twats everywhere.
Who?
I don't know.
Who are you firing that at?
The techno bods.
That's Ben, though, isn't it?
It is Ben, isn't it? You dig deep enough into this stuff, you always hit Ben, don't you?
Bon.
You always hit Bonjamin. Okay, good. Sorry about that. Don't know what happened.
I had loads of
techno bullshit as per.
I think I've got to replace some wires or some kit.
Yeah, I didn't think it was you.
Problems beforehand, anyway.
We were in a two-in-one-out situation, which was very weird at one point.
Are you recording, Henry?
It was Audio Piggy in the middle at a point there, wasn't it? I am recording, yeah.
Should we number off?
We should.
Yeah.
One, two,
three,
four.
Oh,
come on, guys.
Oh, no.
We're screwed.
There's bad vibes already,
aren't we? It's another curse. It's yet another cursed ep. We've almost had more cursed eps than non-cursed now, aren't we? So many cursed eps.
Should we try again? Okay.
Yeah.
One, two,
three,
four,
five,
six.
Yeah.
Yum, yum.
How is the Oscars, Mike? Disappointing. I went in disappointed. I mean, I wasn't nominated for anything. So those around me were trying to manage my expectations of a gong.
Yeah.
Right.
Your team.
On those grounds. Yeah. But you always hope a little bit.
You always hope, don't you? Against hope. Because the chances are so slim anyway of being nominated that by the time...
Yeah. You figure you might as well turn up.
You might as well turn up because even, you know, the chances from getting to not nominated to winning are actually not as low as the chances of being nominated in the first place. So
there's always that chance that you might be sprung a Lifetime Achievement Award as well.
Yeah, at any point.
Yeah, exactly. So you turn up. Sure, they're not letting you on their red carpet, so you bring your own. I mean, that's why I've got my own portable
that's right.
cutting of red carpet that I take with me everywhere I go.
Right. You've adapted one of those devices you get that spool out extender cabled, haven't you?
That's right.
You've adapted it to spool out, well, red carpet weft.
Red carpet weft, fishing line, absorbent gauze, whatever I need, really. There's a few different modes.
Yeah. Just roll it out. Just roll it out, isn't it?
Just roll it out.
Yeah.
And I was dressed by Marks and Spencers, but no one seemed particularly interested in that.
No.
Because of your range, you can do quite a neat trick, can't you, with yourself? Because you've now got an up-to-date camera phone, haven't you? And
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing what these things can do these days, isn't it?
It's amazing what these things can do. I mean, think about it. In the old days, you'd have had to have brought literally a camera with you with the little sort of curtain drape that went over your head, wouldn't you? You'd have to bring that with you. And
you need a special trolley so you can push it along.
A special trolley, yeah? Plus a carrier pigeon to deliver texts. Can you imagine? Mm-hmm. In the old days. But Mike, you've got a little kit, haven't you? So you can film yourself doing an interview with yourself on the micro red carpet that you brought.
I try not to prepare myself with the questions ahead of time, so I keep something a bit fresh.
Exactly, because otherwise you can tell. And you can play a range of interviews, can't you? You can play Frank Boff. They're mainly... they have to be deceased, don't they, for copyright reasons. You can't...
Johnny Carson?
You do a very good
Cicero,
Mazahari,
all
these people.
Cicero, don't you? And relentless he is, isn't he? And of course Confucius, don't you? So you could really put yourself.
Those are quite difficult. Yeah,
you could put yourself over the coals, and you've got a backdrop. Because actually, when you think about it, these days most of media interactions, and certainly most of the main way in which IP is monetized. Monetization of IP is obviously the founding stone of our culture.
That's why you keep churning out IP at a rate of knots.
That's right.
It? Just in the hope.
You've got to keep the IP churning out. You've got to keep it flowing. You've got to keep it.
The Henry Packer cinematic universe.
Because if you keep it flowing, it's only when the IP is flowing that those lucrative salmon of remuneration can, you know, swim up it.
Can spawn.
can swim up it and spawn.
Get swallowed in one gulp by a grizzly bear. Yeah.
By
the grizzly bear of Microsoft.
Yeah. Slash the the massive wallowing toad of my own mediocrity. But no, but mainly it's backdrops, isn't it? So you look at Football Interviews, it's just a backdrop with Suzuki, a selection of logos, Suzuki, Aston Villa, Aston Martin, whichever way around, I mean, you can work. Do you mean
Aston Villa? They're sponsoring Chelsea, aren't they?
They're sponsoring Chelsea, then. Yeah, it's an absolute mesh. So, you know, on the Oscar red carpets, it's mainly just a backdrop, isn't it? They're up against a lot of the.
Well, I put up the sponsors that I'm hoping to get.
So you there's
Cadbury's, Hyundai,
dress for the job you want, isn't it?
Exactly.
Lockheed Martin, BAE Systems. the Kalashnikov Group.
Yeah. North African Surveillance Drone Corp. Mercenaries are us. Mercenaries are you.
McRobinson's, the underwater drone people.
Mm-hmm. And the North Korean Human Leash Company.
Well. That's right.
Mike, get it correct. It's the electronically charged Human Leash Company.
I mean, that's why I'm not getting anywhere with these people.
And Simpkins and Co.'s. Bomb rewirers. You send them in after a bomb's been defused. They can they're bomb refusers, aren't they? They will refuse. They can refuse a defused bomb. But yeah, so you've got to get those. You get those sponsors on, don't you, in advance? That's what you do, and then they can pay
if they want, basically.
Yeah, or they can sue you for defamation.
So, for example, last night Mike was at the Oscars, and behind him was a big hoarding for McKinney's artisanal shrapnel. And Mike will have sent them an invoice this morning. Yeah. They'll know nothing about this. Right.
It's all locally sourced shrapnel. Yeah. It's all, it's very green. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of made out of coconut husks and iron. Yeah. And then they'll choose if they want to pay that invoice, basically. And sometimes, due to an admin error, they just will.
That's why I'm really betting on, really, is that someone somewhere in the organisation misreads the invoice.
Well, it's subscription model, isn't it, Mike? We've talked about this before, which is... Essentially, a lot of the economy, a lot of the media economy these days works on the subscription model. I mean, most stuff works on subscription model now, which is you get people subscribed without them knowing about it, and they have to pay to unsubscribe. Essentially, you're doing the same with your sponsors, aren't you? They have to because they'll have to pay an admin fee to get off your board.
It's a subscription ransom model. Yeah,
it's a subscription / ransom model. And just a cursory glance at your prospective sponsors shows that you are prepared to back up that ransom with swift. And lethal attacks from air, land, and sea, in theory. Assuming those sponsors are actually real and are signed up. And that is that a risk that another sponsor is willing to take?
And cyber eventually, but really my IT skills just aren't up to it at the moment. But I'm trying to work on it. Starting with podcast editing and hoping that's going to be a useful springboard into
hacking the CIA. Good week, Henry.
Good week. Actually, a couple of things have happened this week. One is that new David Attenborough documentary has come out about our precious isles. And I've thought, finally, my love of jingoism and squirrels, my two passions combined in one glorious thing, which I started watching that yesterday. I quite enjoyed it. And also, I've actually been noticing a lot of sort of nature out of my back window recently. British nature, and I've just been finding a newfound appreciation for our humble yet noble
tuberculotic badger.
Because people don't really think of London as being the epicentre of Britain's nature, but
no, they don't. But actually, there's quite a lot going on.
But of course, it's the capital, so of course, I mean that's where the best nature is.
Of course, well, that's where the creme de la fox come, isn't it? And obviously, foxes around the country. You know, they'll talk about the brain drain of the best foxes to London. Same goes for squirrels, robin redbreasts,
wasps.
The best do gravitate towards London, and the ones outside of London, they'll always have a story which will be like, you know, they probably tried London for a bit. They'll say they didn't like it. Truth is, maybe they just couldn't hack it. Do you know what I mean? And there's lots of squirrels. I'm noticing a lot of squirrels at the moment.
Didn't you have a family of squirrels living in your attic?
Yes. But basically, the person at the rear of the property has erected a whole load of squirrel nut feeders, seed dispersers, a really quite complex sort of array of them. And there's squirrels all over. I think this might be a thing about getting older, sort of time passing thing. It's just noticing squirrels more.
Have they put up the nuts and things to specifically attract squirrels, or is it for birds and then the squirrels?
Oh, I don't know, actually. That's a good question.
I don't think people put out nuts for squirrels.
Oh, they don't?
Yes, I don't think there's any such thing as a squirrel table.
Or a squirrel bath. Mm. Or squirrelvery. There isn't an aviary for squirrels, is there?
Imagine an aviary of squirrels, though.
Superb.
Wandering in with a little bag of nuts.
If you put out nuts, you're going to get squirrels. Because Ben, you're someone who's entered the beginnings of the squirrel phase of life, aren't you?
Yes, my death becomes ever nearer.
Now, I just think there comes a point where you notice squirrels more. Because as a young...
Why me? Why,
no.
What is it about
because
me?
You've put out a squirrel feeder yourself, haven't you?
No. I've got bird feeders.
Exactly. Yeah. You've got bird feeders, which let's face it, they're squirrel feeders by any other name.
Which end up being rat feeders, yes.
Which end up being rat feeders.
Well, who's feeding? Are the birds feeding on your bird feeders?
So I live in a sort of new build estate where there is no greenery whatsoever. And as such, no small birds will cross the threshold, apart from just fucking tons of magpies everywhere. So anything I put out just gets eaten by magpies. And I now resent magpies and hate magpies for it. Because all I want is a little sweet brown bird hopping along. Oh, it's a wren. Hello, Mr. Wren. Where are you going? That's not happening. It's just fucking magpie, magpie, magpie.
All right.
I'm having that.
One for sorrow. Two for sorrow. Three for sorrow, four for sorrow. 5,000 for total misery. But what you're talking about there, Ben, that's a classic case of sort of scarcity versus plentitude. Is that a word?
I like it. I like it if it's not.
Animal emotional reaction ratio. which is a
nice simple concept, just to, yeah.
You should write to Attenborough.
It's a nice simple concept.
So I can see you've thought about this carefully.
No, which is just that...
I haven't just come up with that on the spot. Go on.
Such plentitude.
Which is just... You'll just like whichever animals there are less of.
Yes, yeah.
And you'll see whichever ones there are more of as a sort of irritating pest. And...
Although that's not happening with you and squirrels, is it? You're getting the reverse effect.
With me and squirrels?
Yeah.
Put it this way. If I see a squirrel on a tree, I'm not going to be that excited. But these squirrels are doing extraordinary work. They're doing acrobatics. It's crazy what they're doing on these nut feeders. They're just putting on an incredible show, and they're upping the ante every day.
They're driving away sparrows with small twigs used as clubs.
Yeah. It's incredible what they're doing. And every day... They're doing something new. You know what I mean? I think they're just working very, very hard for it. You know,
they're hungry for it. They're trying to one up themselves.
Well, it's London, isn't it? Yeah. It's London. You be the best squirrel you can be. Yeah, you're not lolling about in Exeter, just sort of wasting your life away. Frankly, let's face it. There's squirrels.
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely zero ambition in the squirrels around these parts.
A lot of them are on prescription meds, aren't they? Now, which is not. It's not fun. I mean, it's a serious issue, but isn't it? Such quite sad.
Dragging their big fat tails behind them. Soggy, matted.
Yeah. Whereas in London, the squirrels are pert, they're bright-eyed, they want it. This is their chance. So they're performing for me every day. I open the back curtain, and they're on the West End stage, as far as they're concerned. They're doing pirouettes.
Is it written by Ben Elton?
He's done the book, I think, hasn't he?
He's done the book.
The music's been provided by Adele.
Yes. So it's a lot of fun, but it's got an emotional punch as well. Times are hard at the moment. It's what I need. So they're sort of, it's like they're flying through the twigs sometimes. It's incredible. And presumably they are suspended by little microscopic ropes, I think. But, you sometimes you can notice those, but, you know.
You don't want to think about it too much because you disrupt the magic.
Exactly. Suspension of disbelief, isn't it?
And the squirrels.
And, you know, the fact is I will shell out up to 12 quid for a large box of Maltesers in the break. That all feeds back to them in the end.
Can you put in requests? Like, could you request Phantom the following day if you provided them with the little white semi-face mask?
Yeah. Do you reckon they'd be up to Starlight Express? And you're spreading the word now. So, I mean, people in the provinces are going to hear about this. And so before you know it, you're going to get coach loads of people coming in from Hertfordshire and Oxfordshire and beyond.
Okay, Ben, you know that phenomenon you described? You say you're bored by magpies.
Yes.
You just don't care about them. That reminds me of of what happened to me when I went on safari. Yeah. What?
Oh, what? No.
What's wrong with that?
What do you mean?
What?
I mean,
I'm sorry. I've been on safari, Mike. I'm sorry. I'm not going to hide my light under a bushel. Do you know what I mean?
That reminds me. Do you know what? She reminds me of when I went on safari. How many years ago?
Look, Mike. I've led a remarkable life. I can't take that away. It's happened to me. Yeah.
Okay, but how many times a day are you currently saying?
I'm trying.
Do you know what? That actually reminds me of when I went on safari.
I'm trying. I am trying to cut down, Mike.
Because if it's going into double figures, you're in real trouble.
I'm trying to cut down. It's been, I've talked to doctors about it. It releases, I get a dopamine hit. It releases a certain kind of dopamine, which I can only substitute with rhubarb crumble flavored vape. So I'm also, so I'm trying to wean myself off the safari anecdotes onto the rhubarb crumble vape.
I mean, if it gets to the point where someone asks you if you want a receipt and you find yourself saying, that reminds me of the time I went to safari.
It's amazing how many things can link back to safari.
The problem is, Henry, though, isn't it? That dopamine you get, the other time you had that hit of dopamine was when you were on safari, wasn't it? So that's the problem.
That's right, exactly. Only people that have been on safari will know that that it's something you just can't describe to people that haven't been on safari. But you can make it, you know, your lifetime's work to try. So no. But one thing did happen on safari. I can't remember if I've talked about. I have talked about the safari before.
You talked about how you became more interested in the way people were sitting on the car.
Yes, that's right. Yes, and right. This isn't this. It's such a, oh God, it was such a rich experience, Ben. You've just reminded me. So many layers to it. Honestly, the animals were almost just the icing on the cake. There was so much going on with safari. But one of the things I noticed on safari was that the red sun rising over sweet, sweet Africa is one of the most humbling experiences I've ever had.
The birthplace of humanity.
Birthplace of humanity. Cradle of civilization, is it? I can't remember. Having an elephant literally watch me having a shower.
With the water coming out of his trunk.
To have your armpits lathered by an elephant's hoof is...
One of the most...
It's a life-changing experience.
You are feeling alive. You are right on the edge of death, but you are so, so alive when that elephant is...
Do they have hoofs?
They've got one hoof, one claw, one spring,
and one umbrella stand.
On the first day, you go out on safari, right? And you're in the back of the safari truck, and you drive out, and you're like, oh my God, it's a giraffe. Oh my God, it's an actual giraffe. This is incredible. Look, that's an actual giraffe. Oh, look at it. It's so... extraordinary.
Bang!
You're coming with me.
You've decorated your front room, yeah?
You could do a couple of sofas out of one of those as well. It's really good bang for your buck.
And look, there's another one coming to mourn the loss of its bang! Backup sofa cover for after the inevitable wine spillage on the night when we celebrate our new giraffe-covered sofas.
We've just reupholstered the I-10. Let's go. Sorry, Henry. Carry on.
So the first day, you're like, giraffe, incredible. Look at it. It's like, it's extraordinary. How could nature dream up such a thing?
It's like a totally fucked up horse.
And that's when you wrote your poem, Telescopic Llama, wasn't it? I'm sure I remember.
That's right. Well, my collection of poems.
It's quite a long read, yeah.
And it just completely blows your mind. You're in awe, you're humbled, you mentally start sketching out the beginnings of three or four different anecdotes you're going to be telling people. And it's incredible, right? And then you move on, and then later on, then you're looking for, you know, you're looking for a lion or something, then later on the day, and maybe you don't get to see a lion that day. You're looking for one, you come on. Anyway, then the next day, right, on safari, because, you know, that's what happens when you're on safari, you know, you do safari, and then you get up and you do some more safari, right? The next day you get up and you get in the Jeep, and this time you're like, you've had a chat with some other tourists. You've discussed that there's the big five. Obviously every country has their big five. In Britain it's squirrel, badger, robin, hedgehog. Andrew Lloyd Webber.
So the big five in Africa is obviously sofa, upholstered booth,
iPhone cover,
wallet,
throw cushion,
throw cushion.
And then you got it in your head, right? So I want to see. So I've seen a giraffe. So I want to see a lion, a tiger, this and that.
So what are the big five? Lion, rhino.
So it's lion. It's lion, rhino,
leopard.
Weirdly, I think buffalo. There's one who
elephant.
Elephant, one who classic, a bit like the Oscars in a way. There's always one nominated. You're like, a buffalo, really? Are you sure? Must be. It's all politics, isn't it? He must have known. So, and so then what happens is the next day you go out and you're like, and you drive out and obviously you pass a few giraffes because there's loads of giraffes, and you're like, yeah, seriously, what is that? It's just a stupid cow. It's a malfunctioning cow. What is it? I don't care. Can we please get past these? I want to see a tiger. I want to tick off the list. I want to see a buffalo. Can you please? Just get past these fucking giraffes. I hate them. In fact, run them. If it's quicker, run them over. Go through those giraffes. I just do not care about giraffes. That's what happens on day two. First day, you're like, the magnificence.
And you're insisting on seeing your tiger, for which they have to take you to a zoo in Nairobi, of course.
That's right. But my God.
Because it's not going to happen in the wild at all. And they've kept explaining that to you.
That's why it's so rare. If you can actually see what you need a tiger to have escaped.
If you want to see a tiger in the wild on safari in Africa, you need to go to the Nairobi. You need to set free the tigers in captivity.
You need to
drive them out into the plains and then start again.
It's a hell of a moment there. So basically, I think that's the thing, which is just like all animals are equally wondrous.
Not true.
No. But you're like, you're anti those magpies, Ben, just because there's loads of them, right?
Yeah. They've also got like a mean vibe.
Yeah. Have they got quite a bad...
They've got a bad rep.
Have they got a bad squawk as well? Have they got like a bad song? Is the song a bit... Yeah. So which are the ones you want?
In my garden, peacock.
Welcome to the Flightless Bird Zone.
That's what you're after.
Emu.
And cassowary, obviously. The only way, because the equivalent of a bird feeder for a cassowary has to be a bird feeder full of human children. Isn't it? So they're not actually legal anymore.
Right, let's turn on the bean machine.
Bean machine. Bean machine.
Okay, this week's topic, as sent in by Sarah in Bremen.
Thanks, Sarah.
Is pirates. Here's one of the things I don't understand about pirates. They do the whole walking the plank thing.
Yeah.
Correct.
So if I'm right, I think if you've wronged the pirates somehow, or...
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be thinking, well, come on, guys, you're literally pirates. You know, what have I? Yeah. You're literally pirates. The whole point is that we're bad people doing bad things.
But you've been naughty for a pirate. You've been very, very, very naughty.
Yeah.
And they say, okay, yar, now it is time for ye to walk the plank and join Davy Jones at the bottom of the sea or whatever, you know, all that nonsense. What I've never understood is, why go to the bother of the plank element?
It's a very good point. Just shove them off.
When they could just shove them off the side. What is the added element of what? About 4 to 6 foot of what? Of just a bit of...
Of spare boat, essentially. Isn't it? It's just a bit of spare boat. That ought to be part of the boat. That ought to be part of the actual...
Why prolong... There's the little 6 foot of having the walk before you go in, where you could just go straight in.
Well, because they're naughty. They're naughty, aren't they? Because they make everything a bit naughtier. Everything a bit naughty, everything a bit nastier.
Does it make it nastier, does it, to know that, I suppose that there's a...
I reckon, yeah.
They used to do that thing as well, where they'd put you on a rope and then drag you around, didn't they? Is that a thing?
Isn't that water skiing? Sounds like
keel hauling.
Is that what it's called?
Well, the British Navy did that as well. I think everyone was into that. Wasn't just pirates. That was any old mariner might be up for a bit of keel hauling back in the day.
So what would happen with keel hauling?
You'd be tied to a bit of rope. You'd be stood on one side of the boat. The rope would go all the way under the boat to the other side, where it's being held onto by some bastards. And at the signal, the bastards pull the rope, which pulls you overboard, and then you're dragged along the bottom of the boat, which is covered in barnacles, so you get sliced to bits.
So is
the fun, isn't it?
Is the boat the right way round at this point? What do you mean? How can you be dragged?
No, the boat's fully capsized.
Yeah, the boat's fully capsized. So it's
so everyone is dead.
If the boat's fully capsized, then you have to do it the other way around. Yeah.
So it's quite a heavy toll on the actual main mission, isn't it? For that, just to punish one person for
big engineering job.
It's a huge engineering job.
Teamwork is utterly essential. Stuff like that.
So how do you drag someone across the bottom of the boat? How do you do that?
Because you manage to get a rope to go all the way under it. You know, you might maybe start at the front. I don't know. Maybe you loop it over the front and let it out a bit until it's all the way under the boat like a sort of truss.
And then crucially, as Mike says, big strong bastards.
Yeah.
A big strong bastard then yanks it, and then you get pulled over the barnacles.
Well, it might not be a bastard. It might be just a big, strong, really lovely guy. But you're going to have to tell the really lovely guy that you can't tell them that there's a man on the other end of that rope. You've just got to tell them that it's a
ham.
It's a ham. Exactly. It's a ham.
And you're
and
just
not to worry too much about resistance, just to keep yanking.
And you're trying to create some surface texture on the ham, for example. So
exactly.
Yeah, to help the salt penetrate. For the full cure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like when you score a ham.
Well, exactly. I was thinking of ham.
Put the cloves in.
I was thinking of ham scoring. Yeah.
You've got to make your clove holes.
So essentially, it was human, by any other name, it was human ham scoring.
It was human ham scoring. Yeah.
That's terrifying.
They'd be glazed, yeah. Certainly, afterwards. Yeah.
Glazed and sliced.
So, and was this a fatal punishment, was it? Or was it a reprimand?
Well, usually, yeah. I mean, that's the thing about these punishments of these eras. They tended to be,
yeah.
It's a safe bet that you need to get your affairs in order. You know, it's time. Yeah, it's time to decide who's going to get your CDs and you know who's going to get your nice shirt.
I didn't know about that. It's horrifying.
But the fact, Mike, that that was carried out not just by pirates but also by the British Navy.
Yeah,
your alma mater. begs the question, doesn't it? Who were the real pirates?
Oh,
hey,
probably the pirates. I'd have thought.
Probably the pirates.
Probably the pirates.
Yeah, that's why
But then you get into the old privateer thing, don't you? Privateer, buccaneers, all that biz.
What's a privateer?
Well, they were essentially sort of sanctioned pirates, really. This is Francis Drake and that old gang.
Oh, is that what that is?
So I think privateers, and I'm definitely going to get this wrong, but I'm going to carry on anyway. So I'm braced for a bollocking in the future. My understanding is privateers essentially just were pirates, just criminal-type sailors, keen to make a fast buck, not worried about blasting anyone with a musket, if needs be, who are kind of commissioned by the Crown to do their dirty work. So rather than sending the whole British Navy to go and get sunk by the Spaniards in the Caribbean, let's get these thugs to do it instead. And while you're at it, you can keep a bit of that gold if you like. Try and sink as many Spanish ships as you can. Try not to behave too much like pirates, please, but really mostly just make a big mess of the Spanish fleet. I think that was the idea.
And Francis Drake was one of those people?
I believe so, yeah. So a little bit of arm's length. But he obviously ended up being sort of drawn into the sort of inner circle, didn't he, in the end?
Well, he brought the potato back to Britain.
Well, he discovered Potato Island, didn't he? So did he discover, when he discovered the potato, was that by accident then?
Shore leave.
It was on shore leave he discovered.
Yeah, well, they'd been given the wrong directions. They thought they were finding an island that had a Nando's and a Hooters on it, but right. It didn't. Had nothing. So they just started digging about, putting up the tents. What's this?
Ooh. Starchy. This island's extremely starchy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, because they had landed on a giant sea potato.
Yeah,
that's correct.
A giant sea potato. And what they thought was a forest was actually just those weird sort of roots that grow out of a potato.
Yeah, it was going off a bit, yeah.
One of the most terrifying things I've ever seen once was when... I went into the back area behind the kitchen in my childhood home, opened what I thought was a small shoe cupboard, but was actually being used to store potatoes. And the potatoes had been left in this dark cupboard for like months. They'd been sort of forgotten about. And I opened the cupboard and it was the most terrifying things I've ever seen. It was like, it was like there was sort of alien growth. So you ever seen a potato?
I've seen a potato.
You've seen a potato. Have you ever seen a potato like really up close and personal? when it's been left to its own devices, and I suspect this goes for all the root vegetables, which we very much think of as our friends, and we think of them as you know, tray bake compadres. But left to their own in the dark, a potato will sprout these utterly horrific sort of alien fingers with kind of grotesque sort of like cave flowers on them. That's the most blood curdling things I've ever seen. Have you ever had that experience?
Do you think I've been terrified by a potato?
Interesting.
But I mean, they're but for the grace of God, go I. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I mean, yeah. I'm not saying I'm immune to it.
I've never seen them get to the cave flower stage. Yeah.
When they get cave flower, it's really terrifying. That's probably one of the tests, actually, to beard pirate was, have you ever been frightened by a potato? Yes, probably not for you.
How do you start off as a pirate?
I assume there's got to be a certain number of them that would have just been bopped over the head in Plymouth somewhere and just told you're a pirate now at the age of 8 or something.
There was so much bopping going on back then.
You know?
So much bopping. Everything was bopping on the head, wasn't it? Because you could be bopped on the head and you don't know, you'd wake up, you might be in the Navy, you could have been
a pirate.
You could be in the Royal Navy, you could be a pirate.
You could be operating one of the major ferry concerns, going to the Isle of Wight, for example.
You could be a shepherd.
It was essentially a kind of career, sort of early careers advisor, wasn't it?
You just get a cosh and you're qualified for careers advice.
Yeah, because you'd go down the docks, wouldn't you? Yeah. Essentially, that was like going for your job interview, except you weren't sure what job you're going to get.
Hmm. Yeah.
You'd go down and you would...
If you had good parents, then they'd probably advise you to make sure you sunk a pint of gin first.
That's right.
That would make the evening go smoother.
That's right. And and the children of more wealthy, for example, merchants... But if you had wealthy merchant parents, they'd buff up your head. They'd try and make your head look bigger, wouldn't they?
More boppable.
They're more boppable, exactly. And they would
because the decent jobs, the decent, you know, boppers, they're bopping early, aren't they?
Exactly.
You know, they're getting, so you want to draw in your Royal Navy boppers early doors.
Exactly.
Because it's the pirate boppers. They're still in the pub getting lashed.
Yeah.
And they're only popping out later on.
Exactly.
So if you haven't got a full on bouffant, you're going to get bopped by a privateer or a pirate.
Yeah. So you'd go down, you'd go for a stroll by the docks, and you'd be you'd stroll up and down, and you'd be sort of shaking your locks around. So, some people would actually draw a sort of target essentially on their forehead. Mm-hmm. A shady person would come up to you, whack you over the head, and you'd wake up, and you'd wake up and discover what the rest of your life was going to be. You might be
I'm a librarian.
I'm a librarian. I'm a librarian with a sore head.
Ship's librarian.
I'm a ship's librarian.
On a cruise ship. Doing the fjords. Oh, lovely.
I'm a donkey colour. I'm going to be spending the rest of my days trying to rid the royal forests of as many donkeys as I can. Which is all those yieldy jobs.
Paid in pelts. All these jobs are paid in pelts, of course.
Oh, everything paid in pelts, of course, yeah. I'm a pelt weaver, which essentially means you're self-employed because you weave the pelts and then pay them to yourself. The skull and crossbones, that can't have been a real thing, was it? The flag.
Yeah. You think it's too on the nose?
What's the flag? It's so on the nose. So on the nose. Was that real, the flag?
The Jolly Roger?
I think so, but I think, you know, these days when you see it, you're more likely to see it on the top of the bonce of quite an adorable six-year-old child, as
that's
opposed
true.
To flying from the mast of a boat full of just quite traumatized, deadly, psychopathic killers.
It is one of the great rebrandings in history, isn't it? Pirates from...
It's a triumphant piece of rebranding.
From probably, you know, downright evil murderers, killers, stabbers.
With very poor personal hygiene as well, one imagines.
Yeah.
Bad dentition.
Yeah.
No pension plan.
No pension. It would have been true horror, actually, wasn't it, on a pirate ship? Probably the best part of your day was just defecating over the edge, wasn't it?
I guess so. And even when you've got a bit of loot, right, you're off, you find your desert island, you think you've got a pension plan, because there you are burying your treasure in the bottom of a big old hole. But you're all looking at each other thinking, well, I mean, you're going to try and kill me in a minute. Because I know where this is and you know where this isn't. And Bob's going to try and kill me as well.
The capacity for treachery.
And one-armed Steve's going to try and kill me.
And we're famously all arseholes, essentially.
That's how we got the job.
The one thing we had to write on our CV, i.e. our foreheads, as we were walking down the docks, well, the two things were, one was not afraid of potatoes, and second...
Died in the wool, arsehole.
Absolutely, died in the wool, Robin. So, by definition, you've got a hard to control group of people.
Team management. You know, the away days were must have been an absolute nightmare.
Absolutely. The team building.
The Christmas party as well. Stay away from that.
Yeah.
Never the same caterer twice, is it?
Never the same caterer twice. Run through.
No, we'll do that gig again.
Run through, not just at the starter, at the pre-starter olives stage, wasn't it? Any excuse to run through the caterer on a curved sword. And all you've got as a captain is just the sheer size of your beard is the only way, isn't it? The sheer size of
and how much of it is on fire?
Yeah, at any one time. Yeah.
If you've got some flaming tapers going on your beard and pubes, then you know you might last a few days, but otherwise, forget it.
Yeah. From that to just adorable children dressing up as
just gently whacking their siblings with plastic cutlasses.
Yeah, it's a bit like dinosaurs as well, because the only other thing I can think of, you know, that comes to mind that's more horrifying than a pirate crew would be a load of dinosaurs. You know, huge, utterly brutal, utterly emotionless, lizard-eyed lizard men. Essentially,
there's no man element of them at all.
Well, there are. Have you ever seen a T-Rex, mate?
No, I haven't.
They're walking around on two.
Or is anyone else on Earth?
They're walking around on 2 feet. Yeah.
Your argument is the T-Rex preceded the ape, isn't it? You've gone one further than Darwin.
Of course it did.
You reckon it's T-Rex, ape,
yeah,
pirate, modern man.
This very weekend, I was wearing a pirate eye patch.
Were you? Mm. To what end?
I went to a party, an excellent party that happened on a barge.
This sounds like a sort of delicious London sex party where you all put on eye patches and leather one pieces and then took to the water.
Ben, as a Londoner, there's a certain level of cultural sophistication and being into the arts does go with a more intense form of hedonism. It goes with it. So, yeah, we enjoy the theatre, we enjoy novels, we enjoy minimalist music, and we enjoy each other's bodies in ways that
that we would find reprehensible.
That you would find reprehensible.
Soho, Battersea,
Old Southwark,
Streatham,
Vauxhall,
Tufnell Park,
Barnet, technically,
Madame Tussauds,
the Cenotaph,
Halfords,
Zone 5.
Mind the gap between your provincial existence and this metropolitan utopia. Next stop, urban enlightenment.
The glamorous London life of Henry Bacher.
Hang on a second. Is that Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber? No, it can't be. Because you're Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber.
I know!
You did the other day send us a picture on WhatsApp of you about to go into the theatre to watch Madea, which I thought was very high culture.
Yeah.
And I thought it won't be long before he's involved in a waterborne leather sex party.
The things go hand in hand. I mean, just today on Amazon, for example, I received a brand new leather jerkin. So that's it's hard welt leather. So it's triple welted
chicken leather.
It's a triple welted chicken leather jerkin.
And it's barbed on the inside, isn't it?
Internally barbed. Yep, and barbed both ways.
Yeah.
So whoever I'm with will also be experiencing barbing. But at the same time, I also received a brand new copy of Nicholas Nickleby in the same. I signed for both at the same time, and that's how it works. Ben, a little confession to make, actually. You know, I did send you both a photo of a theatre with Medea written on it.
Yeah, by Euripides.
Small confession. I was actually just walking past that theatre rather than going into it.
Oh,
I know. Sorry,
you had us believe that you were dabbling with the higher cultural arts.
I know.
Arts.
Sorry. I just like playing with how I'm perceived by you. Which in a way is a kind of metatextual game, which again you wouldn't understand, and again would turn me on slightly in ways that you also wouldn't understand. So yeah, I was on a London barge
do you
party.
Live in Nottingham?
Why, what's that called? what
are you in London?
It's all a
all?
lie.
Exactly, we didn't
your entire
know.
Metropolitan existence. You actually spent most of your time watching reruns of Only Fools and Horses from your flat in Nottingham.
Yeah. occasionally waddling down to the Robin Hood shopping centre. Yes, is that a thing?
Probably should be.
I feel like it is. Yeah, basically, yes, you're right, Ben. To be honest, the last book I actually read wasn't a book. It was an M&M, and it only had one. Didn't have any words. It just had one letter, which is M. That's the main.
Did you finish it?
I didn't finish it. No, I couldn't get through it.
Was it a short, wordless monologue from a James Bond film?
What? I didn't get that.
M.
Yeah.
M.
Oh, fuck's sake, yeah.
There's a character called M.
Very good. Now, I got...
Cursed app.
I read half of the M. So N.
No.
Yeah. I gave up halfway.
Half an M isn't an N.
I got halfway through an M, gave up, so I read an N. Well, visually, yes, it is two N's in a row is an M, isn't it?
No, you need to get two-thirds of the way through an M.
An R and then an N.
What's that?
It's an M.
Cursed app.
An R and an N.
I don't know what...
There's no R.
You've got two N's. You got a fat middle leg, haven't you?
Here's an interesting question.
Yeah.
How do you spell the letters? So, M...
Not an interesting question.
M, for example, I would argue that M, for example, is spelt E.
E-double-M.
E-double-M. N is spelt E-double-N. F is spelt...
I don't think I'd double these guys at all.
Are you not doubling them?
I wouldn't have doubled them, no.
Just E-N?
Yeah.
So okay. B, well, we could start from the beginning. A, I think, is the only one that's actually just spelt A. Well, it's A-Y, actually, isn't it?
A-I.
A-I? Okay, you go for A-I. A...
AY for me.
Otherwise, you're an I.
B is spelled BEE, isn't it? B.
Okay, I'll take it. Yeah.
CSEA. Yeah.
Potentially. Yeah.
DEE.
I'm worried that you're going to go all the way through.
It's going to be hard, quite. Yeah, I've sort of started now, haven't I? But it's an interesting thing to consider.
It's not, though. I mean.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, maybe it's not as well. And in a way, that's interesting to consider, isn't it? You see, I like to see things from both sides, you know, as a London / Nottinghamer. I tell you, the one which is quite hard to spell is H. H, I think, is spelled A-C-H-E, is it? Sort of.
No, because that's H.
No, I'd go A-I-T-H.
Oh, that's good.
A-I-T-C-H.
Yeah, that's good. H, yeah.
Well, if anyone's still listening, apologise.
Apologise for all that.
For that. And well done. I can only assume that you nodded off for a while and... Welcome back to Three Bean Salad Podcast.
We're back. But do email in how you spell any letters, if you
but
want.
To Henry, please. not to the general account.
And please try and guess my email address, please. So I went to a London barge party where we all met up in on a barge and started off in London's Little Venice, which, if you've ever been there, is it's a massive insult to that area because it's I mean, I call it actual Venice, is what I call it.
You think it's better than the real deal?
Oh, not even close. I mean, I think Venice should be called Big Actual Venice.
I think Venice should be called Little That Area.
West London that's tucked away.
Sort of near Paddington-ish.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Venice should be called. Big, that bit sort of behind.
Kind of, you get off at Warwick Avenue Tube, I think.
Or the Circle Line exit.
Big,
from...
that bit near Warwick Tube and Paddington with a couple of nice pubs in it. Italy.
Yeah. But so we started there, and I wore an eye patch at one point for a photo op.
That doesn't really clear up why you were wearing an eye patch.
Well, no, because there was a light maritime theme going on, and there was some pirate again. Ben, it's London stuff. This, but there was it was all very hedonistic and very sort of last days of Rome. You know, there were some pirate eye patches going around, a couple of tricorn hats.
Were you at a child's birthday party in Nottingham? I was once in the pub with someone, and we asked them what they did, and he worked in marine right. insurance or something.
So he was lying. He was making something up. Yeah, carry on.
Well, it does seem like he was lying because he explained that this was basically like if a ship gets commandeered by modern pirates, often off the east coast of Africa. Obviously, your insurance company, I don't know what they do. They send you a Renault Clio that you can use in the meanwhile, or. courtesy car, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was explaining that's what he did. And, we all thought, oh, that's quite exciting. And then, and this is the bit that I think might have been bollocks, he sort of got a phone call and was like, oh, sorry, guys, I've got to go. You know, ship off the coast of Somalia has been taken by pirates.
I might try that. I might try that at the next awkward social engagement.
So, Ben, exactly. Well, that's the thing, Ben. I hate to break this to you, but that is an old, that's an absolutely old social technique. But it's based on, it comes out of the one which people often use on dates, especially on first dates, which I had done to me a few times. About half an hour into the date, the girl will get a call on her phone. Now, this had been pre-organized with a friend. And then depending on how the date's going, the girl would pick up the phone half an hour into the date and go, oh, excuse me, Henry, sorry, I've just got a call. And she goes, oh, hi, yeah, yes, yeah, I'm on that date. Yes, with that guy, Henry, yeah. He's a complete wanker.
And then she'd say, Henry, I'm sorry, I've just had the news that my dog has vomited.
That's right. But also, in case you didn't hear that, just for the record, I do think you're a complete wanker. So it was a really handy way of a little technique to do on a date.
Just politely letting yourself out.
Yeah. So another thing, another social technique, there are lots of versions of this, but one you can use just chatting to people, just gives you an exit strategy, is at the beginning of the conversation, when you're talking about what you do, you say that you work in maritime insurance.
Yeah.
And then half an hour into the conversation, you'll get a call. If you're enjoying the conversation with the person, you'll say...
Well, let me just think back, because I think what they said was, they said, oh, hi, yeah, I'm just in the pub with some guys. Mm. They're a total barrel of wankers.
Right, okay, yeah. Yeah. And the one I'm talking to right now, he's the absolute top rancid, rancid apple wanker floating on top of that barrel of rancid wankers. This is the absolute, the creme de la toit. Yeah.
Those were his exact words, yeah.
Yeah. But no, if the conversation's going away, if you're enjoying it, you pick up the phone, you go, yes, oh, great. Oh, I'm glad we've had a big refund from the...
From the Somalian pirates.
For the
letter of apology.
For that letter of apology. Because actually...
That hamper, that was good of them.
The incident that happened around the Cape of Good Hope. Turns out, because we didn't need to make that payout for the claim they'd made, because actually it was the children of Somali pirates who were doing a children's party that happened to be pirate themed.
It was actually a London barge party.
It was a London barge party. The barge became detethered. The barge washed up the Cape of Good Hope. The premiums remain the same. The no-claims bonus is reinstated. But what that means is we have a payback, which means I've got an extra £4.50, which means I can buy you, Ben, a pint. And let's Karen enjoying this chat. So that's what they do if it goes well. That's what they do if they're enjoying talking to you. And then if they're not, they give it there's been a pirate attack in the Caribbean, wherever it was.
Well, off the Horn of Africa.
It was, East Africa.
I mean, if they say Caribbean, then they're not even trying to lie convincingly at this point.
Well, that's pirates, I think.
Pirates.
That's bloody pirates.
Thanks, Sarah.
Yeah.
Arr, me hearties.
Email time.
When you send an email, must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
It's time for Listener Bollocking of the Week. This is from Megan in Australia. This bollocking pertains to a section of the show that I believe has been bollock-free up until now. The Sean Bean Lounge.
What? Mike, you fool. You fool, Mike. What have you done?
Accessing Listener Bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
Dear Beans, or as we would say in Australia, bastards. That's from Megan, that's from an Australian. I have a few bollockings in relation to the Sean Bean Lounge Australian Stars of Stage and Screen Toblerone Feast section. Firstly,
a few.
Russell Crowe is not an Australian, he's a New Zealander. He has lived here from age 21 and he may well be a citizen, but that counts for nothing. Australia does not claim him.
He's a citizen, but that counts for nothing. What a sentence. Megan, good grief.
Can I say, sometimes a bollock is so large and so close that you actually can't see it until its shadow is lifted.
The hairs are tickling you on the chin.
Yeah. Until its huge pubes are poking you right through the eye and out the back of your head. Because that's a bollock we've all been secretly, unbeknownst to us, living with on this podcast since inception, isn't it?
He wasn't in Inception.
Didn't. Nice. Or was he?
It was all in Russell Crowe's imagination.
And then he wakes up from it and he's like, oh, mate, I'm stuck in traffic again. And then it's that film, Unhinged. That's the actual film. Inception exists within the Unhinged film universe.
Okay, so let's chunk this. So that first chunk, Mike, do you accept or reflect that bollock?
I refute it and reflecto bollock it on the basis of international law.
Okay.
Ooh, nice.
I respect Russell Crowe's citizenship, and I will not have it stripped in the name of a bollock.
So she's saying that he is
She said that he's a citizen.
He's a citizen of Australia.
Hang on, I've just looked it up.
She says that he's not Australian. I think that means he is Australian.
This is an article from The Guardian.
Okay.
Russell Crowe claims that he was twice denied Australian citizenship. Regarded as one of Australia's greatest cultural exports, The New Zealand-born actor has twice been refused citizenship by the nation he calls home.
Is that still the case? All right, fine. Well, in that case, I'm going to grant him Australian citizenship.
Yes.
Because I think he's done an awful lot for the Australian nation. Yeah. And so on that basis, reflecto bollock of that bollock chunk.
So that's a citizenship granto reflecto bollock. Perhaps straying into bollock back territory. Not sure, though.
If you'll bollock me, then I'll bollock you. Bollock back.
Okay. This one, I'm not sure about this one. Secondly, nobody in Australia has watched Neighbours since Kylie Minogue left. This is a fact, and only people in the UK have watched this show since the late 80s. Nobody in Australia knew who you were talking about. Mm. It doesn't make them not Australian, though, does it?
Well, I mean, it's a bit like, you know, if a tree falls in a wood and no one hears it.
Was it in Neighbours?
Was it in Neighbours?
Of course, you could say the opposite as well. The opposite is also true for Shropshire Boys, isn't it? Which hardly anyone in the UK watches Shropshire Boys. Particularly not in Shropshire.
Yeah.
Whereas it's all they talk about in Australia, isn't it, Shropshire Boys?
Or Shroppo, as they call it.
Or Shroppo.
Well, because it's actually filmed in Leicestershire.
That's right. And certainly none of us have watched it since Nigel Haves left. Haves, of course, is our Minogue.
Yeah. And he actually left before filming, didn't he? Because he changed his mind about the whole project.
That's right. Well, he didn't believe in Shropshire.
Well, again, I'm going to reflect a bollock on the basis that Madge Bishop, the lady who played Madge Bishop, is an Australian star of stage and screen. These guys come over. They do a bit of panto, stage, ticked. I mean, these are buns on seats people in panto season.
Absolutely.
And screen, you know, that's an obvious tick.
So, yeah.
I mean, I'm afraid, Megan, I'm sorry. That's your second.
I would agree. I think that's a very feeble and withered tiny little bollock that... Just the fact that Australians don't watch the TV show doesn't mean those people aren't Australian stars of Australian screen.
That bollock has the exact size and sort of magnitude and inspires the same level of awe as the shriveled pip from the inside of an olive when you look at it on a saucer and go, oh, that's gross, isn't it? Small, wet, feeble.
Squirrel bollock.
Reflecto bollock. Australian actors, Mike, as you say, it's very true, isn't it? Australian actors, often they'll work in Neighbours. And they won't see each other for years. And it's one of those sad things, the actor's life. You get together on projects and you don't see each other for years. And often they'll then meet up again for the first time in decades inside a British pantomime horse. And often it'll be live on stage. And sometimes if you're watching a panto in Britain, you'll sometimes hear, oh, mate, it's been bloody ages, mate. Are you serious, mate? Be like, oh, you look great.
Well, it'll look like the horse is leaking, but actually it's just tears seeping through its abdomen.
It's just tears. It's just Australian tears.
Okay. I'm starting to feel quite emboldened now, Ben. That's two in a row.
Okay, well done, Mike.
And the last one is the one that I think a lot of people sent. This is a multi-omni bollock.
Uh-oh.
Wagga Wagga is not pronounced Wagga Wagga. It's pronounced Wagga Wagga.
Is it really?
That annoyed a lot of Australian listeners for some reason.
I'll take that, absolutely. Okay, well, I apologise.
What is that a reference to?
It's just a place in New South Wales.
Oh, I see, Wagga Wagga.
I'll absolutely accept that. That's fine. That's a square deal.
Bollocking accepted.
Now, for the next email, I stand at a crossroads, gentlemen. And, you know, I choose which emails we read out. We can't read them all out. And depending on which I choose next has a huge impact on the future of the podcast. The question I'm asking myself is, do we want this podcast to fundamentally largely become about geometry and triangles going forward?
Because that is an avenue that is open to us, isn't it? That is a...
Oh, it's open to us.
And that path disappearing towards the horizon looks like a very, 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 very stretched isosceles, doesn't it? That is one way we can go. Yeah, maths, geometry, angles, calculus, Pythagoras. What's the other one?
Well, just more of the same sort of stuff about emus.
Just more of the same, just absolute nonsense and shite. Interesting.
We've had a number of, genuinely, the email account has been set fire to by our talk about triangles. It turns out that most of our listeners are PhD level academics who will write a very long email that includes italics.
Which, of course, is the closest a typeface can become to triangle, isn't it? It's trying to become a triangle, isn't it, when it's leaning over?
And what I'm going to say is, I'm going to say, thank you for your emails. I can't say I understood them. I'm not sure a general audience would understand them. And it feels like almost we need to do sort of spin-off geometry-based podcast.
Well, people taking on that reflectobolic email of yours.
Yes, yes.
They were taking that on. Yeah, the one about the triangles in the plane.
Whether it was on a flat plane or a globular plane, yeah. They weren't happy.
It got some heat, did it?
It got heat. Oh, it got heat. Also, I mean, I can barely remember it, kind of what went on, but do you remember we had an email from Dr. Harry Reynolds?
I do. The plane triangle one was in response to that.
So Dr. Harry Reynolds, I think, was telling me that I was wrong. I can't remember. And then someone sent in
a preemptive reflectobolic shield.
Well, no, I think someone else did that, which we then used
Someone else did that.
We sort of used on Harry Reynolds.
Yes, exactly. And denigrated Harry Reynolds, I think, as well, on the same show.
Anyway, Reynolds writes, it's the former Dr. Reynolds here. I wanted to let you know that the pre-bollocking reflecto shield that you used so expertly against me has resulted in my PhD being rescinded. I hope you are happy. Yours shamefully, Mr. Harry Reynolds.
Oh, dear.
Crams. Well, maybe we go down the other route then, because this is dangerous territory now, isn't it? If people's...
Yeah, I think that's why I want to say to all those people that sent in baffling geometry-based emails, thank you for your email, but we can't go there. We just can't go there. For example, we had an email that invokes the reflecto-reflecto-reflecto-reflecto-bollock.
What?
That's a level of...
Ooh.
You know, you mentioned Inception. Just simply too complicated and...
That would blow Russell Crowe's tiny mind.
So anyway, as a palate cleanser, let's talk about a final email from Leslie in Alaska. Ooh. Now, Leslie from Alaska has been in touch before, and you may remember that Leslie from Alaska has a son, he of the onion birthmark. Now, a little reminder for those who might remember, we talked about...
A long way back.
I can't remember quite why this happened. We talked about how a child with an onion birthmark would rise up and...
And eventually vanquish Spurbs.
Mm-hmm. Then it turned out there were two children within our listenership who had this onion mark. Anyway, Leslie writes, in light of the recent threats you've received from the Sons of Spurbs, I write to offer you a ray of hope. Cormac the Onion Child, the one of two who are destined to defeat Spurbs in a cataclysmic battle.
Going to have a great time at school, Cormac the Onion Child, isn't he?
One of the two destined to defeat Spurbs in cataclysmic battle is now 18 months old. He trains daily in a rigorous program of jiu-jitsu, international diplomacy, and knife wielding.
Yes, this is... Can I just say quickly, it was foretold thus.
He listens to Three Bean Salad weekly. And Mike will be pleased to know that his first words were, oh, crumbs. Raising the child of a foreboding prophecy is not without its challenges, and your podcast has been a vital resource. It is universally true that there are only two kinds of advice parents want. One, non-judgmental support from parents who have been there. And two, satirical parenting bullshit from comedians who are clearly aware they have zero business offering advice on anything whatsoever. Don't know which one she puts, which category she's sorting us into there.
Interesting. Didn't say.
To that end, may I propose a new recurring segment on the pod, Three Bean Parenting. I need hour-long recordings of the tide times to soothe my son during those nights of teething-induced sleeplessness, and I need, nay, demand, to hear Henry reduced to tears as he attempts to explain how to work a breast pump.
Interesting. We'd be going up. I mean, there's a lot of parenting specific pods, aren't there? We'd be butting up against quite a congested market.
That's true. Having said that, it is better than any ideas we've ever had about what to do with the pod, isn't it?
It is a niche, isn't it?
I certainly think I could contribute to a parenting pod, having reared Bluebell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pretty successfully. It's basically the same thing. It's putting wet meats into dishes, keeping them hydrated, isn't it? Same sort of thing.
You've also got the unique perspective of you've lived that life of, you know, the accidental child. So it's a useful.
Exactly. Yeah.
Something to
exactly.
bring.
Because Mike didn't want you.
Mike didn't want me.
But he fathered you. Leslie signs off by saying, Cormac, the unknown child, learned how to turn the vacuum on yesterday. May this be a warning to the sons of Spurbs. Uh-huh. Once he figures out how to start the car, you're fucked. Thank you, Leslie in Alaska.
Yeah, he's going to be on a skidoo before we know it, isn't he?
Okay, time for our Patreon section. And one of you, the listeners, has sent in a version of our jingle, which is always very welcome indeed. This is from Charlie. Charlie has sent us a few things in the past, actually. So I think he gave us a death metal version of the mm-hmm. theme tune. He unearthed that Led Zeppelin demo.
Great find. Great find.
And he also made the Clowncore version of the Bee Machine jingle.
Horrifying.
Which was haunting.
That was quite
deeply, deeply disturbing.
He says, I don't like to pat myself on the back, but I think it's pretty clear. I know how to read a room. You do. So continuing in that fashion, here's a skate punk version of the Patreon jingle.
Yes.
Absolutely brilliant.
Right, outstanding.
Love that.
It reminds me of those films from the 2000s, like American Pie and, you know, those kind of ones where it's like, dude, oh my God, you fucked the postman?
Gross. Dude.
Charlie writes, the amazing singer Janet helped make this happen. I don't think she's ever heard the podcast. So the best part for me was imagining the thoughts that she had going through her head when I asked her to shout the line, /3 bean salad.
Well, thanks to Janet. Please pass on our thanks to Janet, Charlie.
Janet did a very good job.
Incredible.
If you'd like to join our Patreon, you can do so at patreon.com/3bean salad, where you can get our monthly bonus episode. You can get ad-free episodes. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out in the Sean Bean Lounge, where Michael spent the evening last night.
Yeah, what were you getting up to?
Well,
it was the old it was the old hide and seek seafood roulette, wasn't it?
It certainly was. Thank you, Henry. And here's my report.
A rare treat at the Sean Bean Lounge last night, as Sean Bean dusted off the spinning roulette buffet wheel for a game of hide and seek seafood roulette. An over-vigorous first spin from Laura Kate Vinson, whose strength you should underestimate at your peril, dispersed Wes Hall's pile of dried seaweed, causing him to be exposed immediately and sent home in disgrace. Tom O'Callaghan put all his chips on red 17 but stained the bays owing to excess vinegar and was also reprimanded. Grace MacPhail went for red 23 and immediately unearthed Katie McBurney and Laura Hurran hiding in a breaded crab cake. Jim Baxter, a veteran of aquatic casino life, spread his bets across all the black pockets and found Sophie Shippen in a prawn cocktail, Carolyn O'Reilly in a haddock booner, Eddie Thomas and Rory Gracie in a basket meal, bracket scampi, Craig Bar Green in a dogfish bisque, and Josh Pollard in a parrotfish trifle. The table was reset for a second round, but the evening immediately hit a series of snags, as Karen Horrocks had hidden in a clam chowder without an emergency flotation device and came close to being sunk by a heavy lard on. Ali Blake's sashimi concealment was over-wasabied and almost burnt through Ali's wetsuit, and Lucy Firth had over-sealed herself within an Oyster Rockefeller and very nearly suffocated. These issues addressed, the wheel spun once more. Maria Edlin bet the farm on paella evens but came up riceless. Jennifer Ackerman put a modest bet on Red 35, but won big when she found Michael plus Sydney in a Sea Otter Thermidor. Laura Sharp tried to beat the system by going all in on Black 10 and concealing herself on the same pocket in a Mackerel Wellington, but fell foul of Stuart Jones, who'd arrived late and missed the briefing and ate Laura with a side of garlicky green beans. Only Karen Candlish was known to still be hiding on the board, so the stakes were high as Georgia Mason bet on Scallop Bolognese, Red 13. Brad Harris on the Sticky Trout Pudding, Black 22, but it was Sammy JC who cracked it with the last bet of the night, finding Karen in Red 31, hunched into the fetal position in a beluga and squeak. As ever, all winnings were donated to the Sean Bean Charitable Seafood Fund for the preservation of Sean Bean in seafood environments. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the podcast. Let's finally work out whose version of our theme tune will play us out. Thank you to everyone who sent us a version of our theme tune. They're always brilliant. Would you like a Mr. Sandman-influenced a cappella version?
Ooh.
Or a Dark Mambo version?
I'm a big fan of Barbershop, personally, Mike. But go on, Mike, what do you
think? I was also going to go for the a cappella just because I thought it might be a nice contrast to our skate punk that we've just had.
Good thinking. Absolutely. Yes. It's probably about as far from skate punk as you can imagine, isn't it? This is from Mimi. She says, hello, Beans. For ages, I've wanted to make a Mr. Sandman influenced a cappella version of your theme tune, and I finally got round to it tonight. It's a bit rough, as I made it in about an hour, but I had a lot of laughs with it. Thank you, Mimi.
That's all we expect.
And thank you to everyone for listening.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Thanks all. Cheerio.
Bum, 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 bye.